going to finish up Jeremiah, Lord willing. We are in chapter 51. It's a continuation, this chapter is, of chapter 50, which is the judgment of Babylon. And it's interesting because of all the judgments that God made against the Gentile nations, the enemies of Israel and so forth, none of them has gone to this great of length to place judgment upon a nation. None of the other nations were given this kind of judgment. These two chapters encompass 110 verses of judgment against Babylon. So God takes this particular part of his word very seriously in order to dedicate that much of it to giving Babylon what's due it. Now, Babylon the nation is the real issue for the people of Babylon and for the children of Israel that lived in Judah. But the picture or the type of Babylon is probably more important for us to consider. Babylon was judged for their part in taking Israel captive and doing exactly as God intended for them to do. God said in the last chapter, though, that they enjoyed it way too much. They enjoyed being the instrument of destruction for Judah. Babylon, in its typology, is a picture of rebellion. It all began at the Tower of Babel, where Nimrod, who was a mighty hunter before the Lord, or more literally, a rebel against the Lord, he was the one that was responsible for building what they called the Tower of Babel. It was a ziggurat. It was a tall structure that they built and designed to study the stars in a perverse way, not with astronomy, but what we would call astrology. And it was all about them and what they could get from studying the stars. It had nothing to do with God. In fact, it was an out-and-out rebellion against God. And so Babylon, which is kind of the weird kind of tense to how they came up with Babel, it's really Baal. It's what it is. It's back to the old Baal thing. And it's confusion or rebellion is what we would call it, which is confusing. Rebellion is confusing. And confusion results really from rebellion much of the time. If you're confused about things, chances are you're rebellious in your living. Confusion comes from rebellion and vice versa. So it has stood for rebellion throughout the ages and will do so all the way through the end of this thing we call the Bible. In the last book of the Bible, in Revelation 17, 18, in the first part of chapter 19, it deals with how Babylon, the world system, will fall. And that's what this really represents. So when you look at these verses, again, keep in mind, Babylon, the city, the nation, the kingdom, that empire, it's really the first part of this, but it's not the ultimate idea. The big picture is rebellion is going to be judged. Every last bit of it. 110 verses worth of it. God will put down forever one day rebellion against him. So let's look at this. Again, a good reading of Revelation 17, 18, and part of 19 will give you some parallels that are interesting. We see in that the Antichrist movement or the rebellion against God in its ultimate sense. Now, this was written, this part of the text was written, you know, again, around 594, 593 BC, somewhere in there. But watch this now. This is a prophecy continuing against Babylon, and Babylon is a proud city of man, we would call it. God declares war on Babylon here. Watch this. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up against Babylon and against them that dwell in the midst of them that rise up against me a destroying wind. If you stand up against God, he will blow you away. It's the idea. You cannot stand up against God with a defiant heart, with a proud, defiant, rebellious heart, without him saying, he will blow you over. He will blow you out. He will blow you away. And will send unto Babylon fanners that shall fan her and shall empty her land in the day of trouble. They shall be against her round about. Against him that bendeth, let the archer bend his bow. And against him that lifteth himself up in his brigandine or his mail coat, that chained looking vest they used to wear. And spare ye not her young men. Destroy ye utterly all her law. or her host. The idea is Babylon is going to be completely wiped out. Now watch. Thus the slain shall fall in the land of the Chaldeans, and they that are thrust through in her streets. For Israel hath not been forsaken. The idea here is that Israel, even though judged by God and dealt with heavy discipline, was not forsaken by God. And everyone, including the Babylonians, kind of got the idea that that was the case. Because God was allowing their discipline in being taken to Babylon, well, they just figured, well, then God just turned his back on her. And that wasn't true. When you're being disciplined by God, it's really an indication that you belong to God. The writer of Hebrews says that if you're not disciplined by God, then you might want to check whether you're a child of his or not. Because every son gets disciplined, the writer of Hebrews says. So he was disciplining them because he loved them. The other nations, including Babylon, thought that he had forsaken Israel. But Israel's not forsaken, nor Judah of his God, of the Lord of hosts, though their land was filled with sin against the Holy One of Israel. Note that, even though they had filled up their land with sinful things, God still didn't forsake them. What a great truth that is. That even though a people can fill themselves up with sinful things, that God would not forsake them. Why didn't he forsake them? Why wouldn't God forsake his people, even though they were sinful and wicked? Because he had a covenant. God made a covenant with his people. You are in a covenant with God. And he won't forsake you either. Well, what about when I sin? That's not a what. That's not a what if I sin. That's when I sin, you know. What about when? Well, it's not an if or whatever. It's just simply a fact. You're going to sin, and you should be happy that God doesn't forsake those just because they sin. But he didn't forsake them, even though their land was filled with sinful things, because of his covenant. It's a great picture of Jesus. He won't forsake us either. Flee out of the midst of Babylon, though his declaration is, and deliver every man his soul. Get away from there. Get out of there. When the time came for the people to be able to leave Babylon, it was Persia at that point. When it was time to leave, God said, leave. Leave Babylon, or you will be destroyed in what is going to happen to Babylon. And of course, as you know from your history of studying Nehemiah and Ezra, you understand that only about 50,000 of these people actually left when the time was come. The rest of them stayed in Babylon and endured what happened to Babylon. Tragic for them. So God had told them, get out of there when it's time and deliver your soul. Be not cut off in her iniquity, that's Babylon's, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance. He will render unto her a recompense. Now, Babylon hath seen a golden cup in the Lord's hand that made all the earth drunken. The nations have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. They're crazy, is the idea. God allowed Babylon to dish out, right, the meted out discipline that was needed. But when all the nations had drunk of what Babylon represented, and that is rebellion, they became crazed or crazy. It's crazy to be in rebellion against God. And the whole world was kind of dealing with that. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed, verse 8. Revelation 18:2 says the same thing. Babylon is fallen, it says. The system of the world's rebellion will fall one day. The picture here back then was simply a precursor to that. And so he says, howl for her. That is, mourn for her. Those in Revelation chapter 18 will do the same thing. In verse 9, it says that the nations grieved, they mourned, they howled, if you would, for Babylon, for the world system, when it crumbles. Do you think the world system's going to crumble, folks? Do you think it's already started? I do. Our world's already starting to crumble. It won't take much to really finish it off. Is the world in rebellion against God? Yes. How much of the world? The whole thing, right? How many do you think on this planet really aren't living in rebellion against God? A third? That would be generous. How about an eighth? 16th? A 50th? Is a 50th of the world not living in rebellion against God? I don't know. Don't know the answer. It's not a trick question, by the way. You're like, is he going to tell us the answer? No, I don't know the answer. But the idea here is that, you know, what is it going to take then, you know, for God to deal with Babylon in the past? What's it going to take for him to deal with Babylon today? The time has come, just like it came for them back then. There's coming a time when he's had enough of Babylon. So those that are howling for her are those that miss her, that miss it, that miss that way of living. Take balm for her pain, so if so, she may be healed, and she won't be healed. Watch this. Israel, the Jews living in Babylon at the time, they felt bad for what was coming for Babylon, those that knew what the Lord was going to do. How did they know? Well, right here. Jeremiah had prophesied, right? The Jews would have helped the Babylonians, those that knew the Lord. It says in verse 9, we would have healed Babylon. This is the Jews speaking. But she is not healed. So forsake her and let us go everyone into his own country. For her judgment reacheth unto heaven and is lifted up even to the skies. The Lord hath brought forth our righteousness. Speaking of themselves, the Jews. Come and let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God. Make bright the arrows and gather the shields. The Lord hath raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes. For his device is against Babylon to destroy it, because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple. The Jews that had a relationship with God, they were willing to help the Babylonians get away from their rebellion and come and be with them in Judah, but they wouldn't be healed. You ever met somebody that just wouldn't be healed? Just won't go there. I just won't be healed. They won't receive the healing of life. So they said at one point, then we just have to leave Babylon. You see, you can't change Babylon. You can't change what rebellion represents. You can only get away from it. Get out of it. Forsake it, as they are saying here. Since Babylon won't be healed, we have to forsake her. See, God didn't say, hey, stick around in Babylon, see if you can change Babylon. God said, get out of there. When the time comes, get away from Babylon, because the only thing coming for Babylon is destruction. Now, your rebellion, my rebellion, let's take this down to a personal level. My rebellion in me will never be healed. Well, what's going to happen to it? The same thing that happened to Babylon right here. The Babylon in me will be destroyed completely. And good riddance, I say. Are you going to howl for her? No. I'm not going to howl for Babylon. When God finally decisively deals with the Babylon in me, the rebellion in me, see ya. Adios. Right? Now, that's what's going to happen to Babylon, because rebellion has to be judged, period. My old man who is rebellious, who lives in Babylon, by the way, so does your old man. I'm not talking about your dad. Some of you are going, did my dad live in Babylon? Your old man, your old nature, the old you lives in Babylon. He always will. And he, listen, your old man, he won't make it. Did you know that? He's not going to survive the judgment. Your new man will. The new you will make it. Your old man, he's a goner. She's a goner. They're not going to make it. The only thing they can receive is judgment, because they won't be healed. Your old man will never be healed. Quit trying, by the way, to heal the old man. Quit trying to make him better. He won't get better. Well, what am I supposed to do with him? Kill him. Kill him. How? By walking in the Spirit. Romans chapter 8. If you walk in the Spirit, you will mortify or put to death the flesh in you, the old man. You'll kill him by walking in the Spirit. And by the way, that's the only condition he's going to be in forevermore. He's just not going to make it, folks. So don't defend him. Don't howl for him. Some of us miss our old man, I think, from time to time. Hey, where is the old guy? Don't even ask that question. And you know where he is, by the way, at all times. He's up to no good, isn't he? He's always doing something he's not supposed to. He wants to drag you along. So rebellion, turn on it, forsake it, set up the standard upon the walls of Babylon, make the watch strong, set up the watchmen, prepare the ambushes, for the Lord hath both devised and done that which he spake against the inhabitants of Babylon. If you live in Babylon, if you live in that rebellion, then God has devised something against that, those that inhabit Babylon. O thou that dwellest upon many waters, that's Babylon, abundant in treasures, thine end is come, and the measure of thy covetousness. Rebellion destroys, so God will destroy rebellion. The Lord of hosts hath sworn by himself, saying, surely I will fill thee with men as with caterpillars, and they shall lift up a shout against thee. He hath made the earth by his power, and he hath established the world by his wisdom, and hath stretched out the heaven by his understanding. When he uttereth his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. This is God. When God speaks, when God does stuff, things get shaken up. Right? There's vapor going on there. Water sounds like it's coming down from heaven when God speaks. It's powerful, in other words. He maketh lightnings with rain and bringeth forth the wind out of his treasures. Every man is brutish by his knowledge. In other words, dumb. Every man compared to God is a blooming idiot. Although there's men that think that they can judge God, that they can say what is what, how we got here and everything. You know, they're just dumb. Brutish. Every man's brutish by his knowledge. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. Foolishness to have a graven image. For his molten image is falsehood, and there is no breath in them. They are vanity, the work of errors. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish. If God visits any one of these graven images, any idol, anything like that, their time is done. God visits these pagan gods once in a while. He did that, remember, for the Philistines who worshipped that Dagon fish god. Remember that? And the children of Israel had the Ark of the Covenant, which was basically the representation of God's presence, right? They took it into battle. Not a wise move, and it got captured by the Philistines, the Ark did. And they took the Ark of the Covenant, and they took it into the temple of Dagon, their little fish god. It really was an idol they had made, carved. It had a head of a man, and then it had kind of a fish body and little hands sticking out, right? Dagon. And they worshipped him, and they had a little temple for him. Well, they figured they'd take the God of Israel, the Ark of the Covenant, and they'd stick it in the temple of Dagon just to kind of have them kind of buddy up or something. I don't know what their intention was. We'll put their God in with our God and see what happens. Well, the next day, they went into the temple of Dagon, and you know, doggone Dagon, he was just falling over face down in his own little temple. So they propped him up. The Philistines put him back in his place. And they came back the next day. And Dagon was not only fallen over face down, but his head was cut off and his hands were cut off. And there he was, old Stumpy, just a blockhead, basically. Just a block of wood, no hands, no head. And in the presence of God, that's all that he could do. In the day of God's visitation to Dagon, he didn't survive it. Because he was just a chunk of wood. So lame. Time of visitation, they shall perish. Yep, ask Dagon. The portion of Jacob is not like them. The portion of Jacob is God. God is the portion for Jacob. He is our portion, right? Our inheritance is the Lord. Our portion is not like the world's portion, like some Dagon fish god or whatever. For he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. That's my God, see? That's who I worship. That's some lame God that I carved with my own hands. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms, and with thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider, and with thee will I break in pieces the chariot and his rider. With thee also will I break in pieces man and woman, and with thee will I break in pieces old and young, and with thee will I break in pieces the young man and the maid. Doesn't matter. Listen, doesn't matter who you are, if rebellion is how you live. God's not partial to persons. He will not make distinctions because you're old or because you're a woman versus a man or a man versus a woman, right? Doesn't make any difference. Rebellion can be bred in all, and it can be dealt with the same way, young and old. And he's speaking here, by the way, of using battle axes and weapons against Babylon. And by the way, probably the primary battle axe for the Lord when Babylon was finally overrun, it was the Medes and Persians that came through and kind of destroyed Babylon. Later, because Babylon wasn't completely decimated, later Alexander the Great came through and he really wiped it out later after that. The Greeks got him after the Medes and Persians got him. So now, he says, I'll break in pieces. Doesn't matter who you are. I will break in pieces with the shepherd and his flock. With thee will I break in pieces the husbandman and his yoke of oxen. And with thee will I break in pieces captains and rulers. In other words, doesn't matter what your occupation is either. Whether you work in the mill or whether you're a pastor or whether you're, you know, an executive. Doesn't matter. There's rebellion going on in all kinds of people, in all kinds of places. The Lord's going to sweep through our government, folks. And it doesn't matter how important or powerful a man thinks he is. God will deal with him, rest assured. And people bring that up to me once in a while. Hey, what do you think? What should we do about our country? I don't know. Pray for our country. pray for our rulers. You know, what should we pray? I'm praying that we're broken, honestly. Don't you want our land to be healed? Yeah, I do. But you know what that really requires, right? God says, you know, if you want healing for your land, you're going to need to pray to me. And you're going to have to live in obedience to me. And I will come. And I will hear your prayers. And I will heal your land. If my people, God says, will just pray and live for me, then I will do that. So you know what that means, folks? If Christians, if people who know God personally would simply pray and live for him, God would do a work in our country. Well, it's their fault, though. It's the world's fault out there. Well, they're living rebelliously. There's no doubt about it. But God says, if my people will pray, seek me, I'll hear. We need to be more diligent about praying. I'm not all that, well, I can't say that. I was going to say I'm not that political, but that's not true. I'm not nearly, though, as political as I am biblical in my perspective. And it doesn't matter what politics people play or how they feel about politics. The real issue here is obedience and prayer and seeking the Lord and living for him. That's the real deal. So he says, I will render, verse 24, unto Babylon and to all the inhabitants of Chaldea and their evil that they have done in Zion in your sight, saith the Lord. I'm going to kind of recompense, do what you have done. Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord, which destroys all the earth. And I will stretch out mine hand upon thee and roll thee down from the rocks and will make thee a burnt mountain. And they shall not take of thee a stone for a corner, nor a stone of foundations, but thou shalt be desolate forever, saith the Lord. Set ye up a standard in the land, blow the trumpet among the nations. Prepare the nations against her, call together against her the kingdoms of Ararat, Mini, and Ashkenaz. Appoint a captain against her, cause the horses to come up as the rough caterpillars. Prepare against her the nations with the kings and the Medes and the captains thereof, and all the rulers thereof, and all the land of his dominion. And the land shall tremble and sorrow, for every purpose of the Lord shall be performed against Babylon to make the land of Babylon a desolation without inhabitant. There are people living in what we call Babylon today, not just the rebellious condition, but in the place called Babylon. You know, Saddam Hussein tried to rebuild it. He's built some big buildings, magnificent buildings there. He put up a statue of Nebuchadnezzar and himself. Why would you do that? You know what happened, right, to Nebuchadnezzar? I mean, he's not around anymore. But he wanted to be equated with or related to somehow Nebuchadnezzar, like he was going to be the next Nebuchadnezzar. Has he read the Bible? Did he read this story about what happened to Babylon? Right. So anyway, the point is, Babylon eventually will be destroyed in the, again, the sense that rebellion will be put down without inhabitant, meaning it'll never be inhabited again when God finally deals its death blow. That'll be at the end. It's not yet, but it's coming. It's coming a day where he's going to make it without inhabitant. The mighty men of Babylon have forborne to fight. In other words, when this time comes, they won't even be able to fight it. When God finally deals with rebellion against him, with Satan, with the demons, with those that stand against the Lord, the proud, the arrogant, those that don't want anything to do with him, those that think that they don't need him. When he deals with them, they won't even be able to fight it. They won't have a chance. Their fighting will be a thing of the past. They have remained in their holds. Their might hath failed. They became as women. They have burned her dwelling places. Her bars are broken. Again, they don't have anything to fight with when the time comes. And you know what's interesting? God could do this at any time. He could do this any time he wants. Man is so arrogant, he thinks that he's getting by with things. He thinks he's getting by with all this stuff that he's doing, the perversity, the sickness, all that. Well, God hasn't struck us with lightning yet. Don't push it. He's going to deal with it, and when he does, there's not going to be any fighting it. He could do it any time he wants to. He's got that kind of power. And man is so arrogant to think that he can do things against God. One post shall run to meet another, and one messenger to meet another, to show the king of Babylon that his city is taken at one end. In other words, people will be running around. The only thing they're going to be doing is telling everybody else how bad it is. They're being destroyed. And that the passages are stopped, and the reeds they have burned with fire, and the men of war are affrighted. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, the daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor, and it is time to thresh her. Yet a little while, and the time of her harvest shall come. The harvest is coming for Babylon. Everybody reaps a harvest in life, folks. The Bible makes it clear, if you sow, you also reap. A life of rebellion reaps a harvest of destruction. That's all there is to it. People think that that's not so. They'll argue with you. They'll tell you, no, that's not right. That's not going to happen. Nothing like that's ever going to take place. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, hath devoured me. This is what Jews said. He hath crushed me. He hath made me an empty vessel. He hath swallowed me up like a dragon. He hath filled his belly with my delicates. He hath cast me out, meaning he's chewed me up and spit me out. That's what the Jews felt like. The violence done to me and to my flesh be upon Babylon, shall the inhabitant of Zion say, and my blood upon the inhabitants of Chaldea, shall Jerusalem say. It's what Babylon did to the Jews. It's what Babylon, by the way, does to anybody. If you think you can handle Babylon, you're like the Jews here. All that will happen is that Babylon will chew you up and spit you out. Rebellion takes people and just makes mincemeat out of them. And the Jews now recognize it, and they're saying, that's what Babylon did to us. They chewed us up, spit us out, and made us of just a waste. Made us like wasted cases, you know, of junk. We were just completely put out by these people. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will plead thy cause and take vengeance for thee, and I will dry up her sea and make her springs dry. And Babylon shall become heaps and dwelling place for dragons. It's interesting, he's used dragons a number of times for the condition that Babylon's left in. There is one known as the dragon, Satan, that old serpent, the dragon. He is the only one that will be really fit for Babylon. He dwells there. It's the inhabitants of Babylon, the dwelling place for dragons, an astonishment and a hissing without inhabitant. Satan inhabits rebellion. Note it. He lives there. It's his home. He started the rebellion of heaven before his name was Satan. His name was Lucifer. Isaiah tells us he may have very well been the worship angel, so to speak, of heaven. The anointed cherub he's described as. His voice was like pipes. His hands were like tabrets or percussion instruments. His whole being was a worship machine. And he no doubt was leading all the angels in praise and worship to God until pride was found in him. Rebellion. Rebellion that said, I will be like the Most High God. And hey, all this worship, why don't you angels give it to me? Amazingly, a third of them did. But it is Satan who dwells in rebellion, folks. He lives there, and you don't want to. You don't want to live in Babylon in rebellion to God because that's where Satan's home is. The closer you are to rebellion against God, the nearer to Satan you are. Bad place to be. It's a place for dragons. They shall roar together like lions. Oh, he's a roaring lion, isn't he? Seeking whom he may devour, according to what Peter says. They shall yell as lions whelps. In their heat I will make their feasts, and I will make them drunken, that they may rejoice and sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake, saith the Lord. I will bring them down like lambs to the slaughter, like rams with he-goats. How is Shishak taken? Shishak, interesting name. It's a code name for Babylon. Jeremiah used it one time back in chapter 25, verse 26. I don't really know what it means. Shishak, it's just another name for Babylon that Jeremiah used once, and then he used it again here. Many believe that it's just simply a name that he used for Babylon because when he was speaking, sometimes he necessarily didn't want everybody to know he was speaking against Babylon. Who knows? I don't know for sure. But he calls it Shishak here. How is it taken? And how is the praise of the whole earth surprised? How has Babylon become an astonishment among the nations? The sea has come up upon Babylon. She is covered with the multitude of the waves thereof. Her cities are a desolation, a dry land, and a wilderness, a land wherein no man dwelleth, neither doth any son of man pass thereby. It's emptiness, folks. That's what it means. This is one of those verses that kind of picture for us the idea of outer darkness. Nobody dwells there. It doesn't mean that nobody's there. It just means that the inhabitants there don't know anybody's there. The idea that people come up with, I don't know where they get it. People say, well, you know, if I go to hell, at least I'll be in good company. Really? You think? And there's this misnomer floating around that there's a kegger party going on in hell. that, you know, you just sit around and play poker and drink beer and smoke cigarettes or cigars or whatever, and everything's just dandy, you know, crazy. Just lose that idea. It's a place of outer darkness where there is nobody there. Nobody passes by. The result of a Babylonian life for the lost, folks, is a existence forevermore with not seeing or hearing anyone, just you and your thoughts forever. Now that's hell. That's hell. Just a person's own thoughts and no way to gratify what they want to do. No way to do what they want. Their flesh will still have desires, but no way to satisfy anything. And no one to talk to. You won't see anybody. Man, what a place. Aren't you glad you're going to heaven? Heaven, joy unspeakable, or this place? Wow. He says, I will punish Baal in Babylon, and I will bring forth out of his mouth that which he hath swallowed up. And the nations shall not flow together anymore unto him. Yea, the wall of Babylon shall fall. The judgment of the lost will bring an end to people running to Babylon. It won't happen anymore. They'll just be in outer darkness. My people, go ye out of the midst of her. Note what God says. My people, get out of Babylon. Now, maybe that's a word for somebody tonight. But God says, my people, to my people I'm speaking to here, get out of there. Get out of the midst of her. And of course, people say, well, isn't he talking to the children of Israel there in Babylon, telling them to leave when it's time? Yeah, but I think we can take this on a personal note. Get out of there and deliver ye every man his soul from the fierce anger of the Lord. If you don't want to deal with that kind of anger of the Lord, then get away from rebellion against the Lord. Lest your heart faint, verse 46, you fear for the rumor that shall be heard in the land. We fear, don't we? We are overcome with fear when we are in Babylon, when we have rebellious parts that are going on within us. That's when fear overtakes us. When we hear things, we get afraid. And it's because we're not really in a place where we're trusting the Lord, but we're living rebelliously. A rumor shall both come one year, and after in another year shall come a rumor and violence in the land, ruler against ruler. Therefore, behold, the days come that I will do judgment upon the graven images of Babylon, and her whole land shall be confounded, and all her slain shall fall in the midst of her. Then the heavens and the earth and all that is therein shall sing for Babylon, for the spoilers shall come unto her from the north, saith the Lord. There will be those that howl when Babylon falls. There will be those that sing when she falls. When Babylon falls in me, when it's dealt with in me, I find that I sing. Ah, there's nothing like singing praises to God when you've had Babylon dealt with in your life, right? But sometimes, folks, honestly, we can howl. We can cry when Babylon's dealt with because we're kind of attached to Babylon sometimes. How do you know you're attached to Babylon? Well, I find that I can really tell that I'm attached to Babylon in me when I defend Babylon in me rather than simply confessing and letting the Lord deal with it. I find that when I'm defending my rebellion, I'm attached to my rebellion. That's why I defend it. So Babylon hath caused the slain of Israel to fall. So at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. Going to get what she deserves in that sense. You that have escaped the sword, go away, stand not still, remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. Remember, we said that Babylon was this city of proud man. Well, Jerusalem is the city of God. It literally means the foundation of peace, Jerusalem. But he says here, if you will escape Babylon, get out of there. Go away, stand not still, remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem, the foundation of peace, come into your mind. The Apostle Paul puts it this way. You and I need to take every thought captive. We need to let the foundation of peace, the Lord, enter our minds. We need to let him be the thoughts that we have, rather than thoughts of Babylon. He says, we are confounded because we have heard reproach. Shame hath covered our faces, for strangers are come into the sanctuaries of the Lord's house, the temple. That's what happened when Judah was overrun. Wherefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will do judgment upon her graven images, and through all her land the wounded shall groan. Though Babylon should mount up to heaven, and though she should fortify the height of her strength, yet from me shall spoilers come unto her, saith the Lord. A sound of a cry cometh from Babylon, and great destruction from the land of the Chaldeans, because the Lord hath spoiled Babylon, and destroyed out of her the great voice. When her waves do roar like great waters, a noise of their voice is uttered, because the spoiler is come upon her, even upon Babylon, and her mighty men are taken. Every one of their bows is broken, for the Lord God of recompenses shall surely requite. And I will make drunk her princes and her wise men, her captains and her rulers and her mighty men, and they shall sleep a perpetual sleep and not awake, saith the King, whose name is the Lord of hosts. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the broad walls of Babylon shall be utterly broken, and her high gates shall be burned with fire. By the way, that was thought to be impossible. Babylon had tremendous walls. We talked about this before. Many believe that the walls were some 90 feet tall. Now, some have said her walls were 300 feet tall. It's kind of been disproven. Can you imagine 300-foot walls? 90's tall enough. But 90 feet tall, 30 feet thick. Could run chariot races on top of the walls of Babylon. So to say those walls are coming down would be laughable in Babylon's thinking. Nah, how can you take down a wall that's 30 feet thick and 90 feet tall? Well, the Lord can do it with just a whoo, remember. And the people shall labor in vain, and the folk in the fire, and they shall be weary. All things that are graven are going to be judged without exception. So, the word which Jeremiah, the prophet, commanded Sariah, the son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah. A lot of ayahs in that family. Who is Sariah? I thought that Baruch was the one that wrote down the things that Jeremiah wrote. He was. This man, Sariah, is Baruch's brother. And obviously, at the end of Jeremiah's life, he had to pass on to Sariah some things. We don't know what happened to Baruch. He might have died. Who knows? He may have gone somewhere else. We don't know. So Jeremiah, it says, he commanded that Sariah take this, he says, in the fourth year of his reign, of Zedekiah's reign. And this Sariah was a quiet prince. He was obviously quieter than Baruch, his brother. So Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon, even in all these words that are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Sariah, when thou comest to Babylon and shalt see and shalt read all these words, then thou shalt say, O Lord, thou hast spoken against this place to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but it shall be desolate forever. And it shall be when thou hast made an end of reading this book, that thou shalt bind a stone to it and cast it into the midst of the Euphrates, and shall say, thus shall Babylon sink, and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary. Thus far are the words of Jeremiah. This is another action sermon, but not for Jeremiah, but for Sariah, the brother of Baruch. He's to take the writings against Babylon to Babylon and proclaim it to Babylon, and then tie a rock around the document and sink it in the Euphrates River, saying, this is you. This is you, Babylon. See the rock? Plunk. It's sinking. So now, and I'll be done in just a minute, but watch this. Jeremiah, by the way, just as a footnote, died an old man, probably in Egypt. His grave, like Moses, though, is a mystery. Nobody knows where Jeremiah is buried. Those that say they know are lying. Now, a lot of things over in the part of the world where people say, oh, this is where this is. This is where they Yeah. He wrote a long and difficult book, this man, Jeremiah. I'm more than a little impressed with him for a number of reasons. But let's read his last chapter. It's basically just a retrospect of what's happened. It'll take me a couple of minutes to read it, and then we'll be done. Zedekiah was 120 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. And he did that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. For through the anger of the Lord it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah, till he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. And it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the tenth month, in the tenth day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came, he and all his army, against Jerusalem, and pitched against it, and built forts against it round about. So the city was besieged unto the 11th year of King Zedekiah, and in the fourth month, in the ninth day of the month, the famine was sore in the city, so that there was no bread for the people of the land. Then the city was broken up, and all the men of war fled, and went forth out of the city by night, by the way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's garden. Now the Chaldeans were by the city round about, and they went by the way of the plain. But the army of the king of the Chaldeans pursued after the king, and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. And they took the king and carried him up into the king of Babylon, to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. And the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. He slew also the princes of Judah and Riblah. Then he put out the eyes of Zedekiah, and the king of Babylon bound him in chains, carried him to Babylon, and put him in prison till the day of his death. Remember how a tragic thing that was. Why Zedekiah went through that? He didn't listen to Jeremiah. Now, in the fifth month, in the tenth day of the month, which was the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, which served the king of Babylon, into Jerusalem. And he burned the house of the Lord, and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, and all the houses of the great men burned he with fire. And all the army of the Chaldeans that were with the captain of the guard brake down all the walls of Jerusalem round about. This was a very tragic time in Israel's history, when the temple was burned and everything was destroyed in the city. It's just a stark picture, though, folks, of what rebellion's going to do to any nation. Just really a pretty vivid account. So then Nebuzaradan, verse 15, the captain of the guard, carried away captive certain of the poor of the people, and the residue of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away, that fell to the king of Babylon, and to the rest of the multitude. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left certain of the poor of the land for vine dressers and for husbandmen. Also the pillars of brass that were in the house of the Lord, and the brass of the brazen sea that was in the house of the Lord, the brass laver. The Chaldeans brake and carried all the brass of them to Babylon. The cauldrons also, and the shovels, and the snuffers, and the bowls, and the spoons, and all the vessels of brass wherewith they ministered, took they away. Remember, these were all the implements of worship that the false prophets said that, no, they won't take those. They won't take those away. And Jeremiah said, oh, they're going to take them. Everything is going to be taken and destroyed. And the basins and the fire pans and the bowls and the cauldrons and the candlesticks and the spoons and the cups and that which was of gold in gold and that which was silver in silver took the captain of the guard away. The two pillars, one sea, and 12 brazen bowls that were under the bases, which King Solomon had made in the house of the Lord. The brass of all these vessels was without weight, too heavy to weigh. So much brass. So many things, even ancient things, traditional things, like things that Solomon had made. All these traditional things the Jews were using in vain to worship God. Things to worship God with mean little if the heart doesn't worship God with them. You follow? God allowed these things to be taken. It was a picture of the people's real worship. It had already disappeared. It had already gone to Babylon. And concerning the pillars, the height of one pillar was 18 cubits, and a fillet of 12 cubits did compass it, and the thickness thereof was 4 fingers. It was hollow. These pillars, a cubit is about 18 inches tall. So, you know, 18 cubits, things 27 feet, 28 feet tall or whatever. And the chapiter of brass was upon it, and the height of the chapiter was 5 cubits with network and pomegranates upon the chapiters round about, all of brass. Second pillar also of the pomegranates were like unto these. This is really interesting. At the end of Jeremiah, it's just a description of the things that you'll find all the way back in the days when the temple was built. The description that was given when Solomon had the temple built, it just matches up. And there were 96 pomegranates on a side, and all the pomegranates upon the network were 100 roundabout. And the captain of the guard took Sariah the chief priest, and Zephaniah the second priest, and the three keepers of the door. He took also out of the city a eunuch which had the charge of the men of war, and seven men of them that were near the king's person, which were found in the city, and the principal scribe of the host who mustered the people of the land, and 80 men of the people of the land that were found in the midst of the city. So Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, took them and brought them to the king of Babylon in Riblah, and the king of Babylon smote them and put them to death in Riblah in the land of Hamath. Thus Judah was carried away captive out of his own land. This is the people whom Nebuchadnezzar carried away captive in the 7th year, the 3,000 Jews, and 23. In the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar, he carried away captive Jerusalem, 830 and 2 persons. In the 23rd year of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive the Jews, 740 and 5 persons. All the persons were 4,600. Just doesn't mean that that was the size of Judah. Just means that Nebuzaradan personally carried away a number of these people. Now watch. It came to pass in the 7th and 30th year of the captivity of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, in the 12th month, in 5th and 20th day of the month, that evil Merodach, king of Babylon, in the first year of his reign, lifted up the head of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, and brought him forth out of prison, and spake kindly unto him, and set his throne above the throne of the kings that were with him in Babylon, and changed his prison garments, and he did continually eat bread before him all the days of his life. He had mercy amazingly on him. And for his diet, there was continual diet given him of the king of Babylon every day, a portion until the day of his death, all the days of his life. Interesting way to end the book of Jeremiah. I want to point out one thing before we wrap up. For Jeremiah, all these details and all these warnings and all these prophecies, they summed up who he was for 46 years. He gave out that message of warning, prophecy to the people for 46 years. For him, for Jeremiah, the important thing was not success. It is for many. If someone's going to serve the Lord, is called by the Lord to serve, the main interest many have is success. I want to make sure that this ministry I'm called into is going to be a successful one. I want to make sure that the message that I give out, people are going to hear it and respond. Maybe they'll send me letters. Right? Whatever. I just need to know that what I'm doing is successful. Well, it wasn't on Jeremiah's list of things. For him, it wasn't success that mattered, but faithfulness. Was he faithful? Was he faithful to finish? Regardless of how unsuccessful it might have appeared to be. There is a tragic reality in ministry where people vacate positions of ministry daily. And the main reason is spiritual burnout and lack of success. It just didn't work out. Well, we had like 12 people coming to church, right? My pastor used to say, look, if you've got one person coming to your Bible study, it's one more than you deserve. I always just say, oh, thanks, John. That's nice, right? But true, it's true. It wasn't about success for him. It was, am I going to be faithful? And Jeremiah never quit, although he wanted to. In chapter 20, verse 9, Jeremiah said, I'm done. I can't speak about the Lord anymore. I can't keep telling these people the things that God wants me to tell them. And he really wanted to just call it a day, just pack it in. But he didn't, because God had put the word in his heart, and it was like fire in his bones, and he couldn't help himself. Remember, he said there in verse 9 of chapter 20, true prophets of God are usually not received well. Sometimes they're looked at as too pointed, too in your face, sometimes too harsh. Sometimes that's a hard saying, or that's a hard word. Who can hear it? They said to Jesus that day. That's a tough one. Boy, who can listen to that? And some people won't. A lot of people didn't. In fact, Jeremiah isn't recorded in his prophecy ever having anybody say, that was awesome. Wow, man, I'm going to listen to that. I'm going to take that to heart. I'm going to, thanks, Jeremiah. That was really what I needed to hear. Nobody. For all of us, we are called, as Jeremiah was, to bring the message, to tell the people of Babylon, so to speak, that time is coming. The time is up. So I want you to know this. Because people say this to me, I'm not very good at that whole evangelism thing, or I'm not really good at witnessing. doesn't matter. Success isn't the real issue, is it? It wasn't for Jeremiah. It wasn't success. It was faithfulness. Are you faithful? That's all. God's not going to ask any of us. I don't believe. Not one person is going to be asked by the Lord. So how successful were you? I think the only question is going to be, how faithful? How faithful were you? Did you share? Did you witness? I didn't ask if you were good at it. Did you just do it? Did you tell somebody that the time's coming? The time's up. Did you tell somebody that living in Babylon pays bad dividends? Are you faithful? Not are you good at it. Not are you successful at it. Just are you doing it? Jeremiah, hats off to him. He did it. And everybody looking on would have said, he stinks at that. He's no good at that. Nobody is even listening to the guy. He should quit. He needs to retire. You need to find a different occupation, Jeremiah, because nobody's hearing you, right? But he didn't. 46 years. I've been pastoring for 14. I think, wow, Jeremiah, 46 years. He's a lot like Jesus, I find, Jeremiah is. His whole ministry, not very many people listened. People say, well, people listened to Jesus, didn't they? Did they? Jesus, for the most part, was rejected and put to death. Because what he said was just a little bit too real. Still is, isn't it? The words of God, the words of the Bible are a little bit too real for people. And boy, they'll let you know if that's true. So let's go to the table tonight and remember our Lord. Not only that he was born, this time we celebrate that, this time of year. But he not only was born, but he died on the cross. And then he rose again. And you know, in that process, he saved us from our sin. See, we're not going to outer darkness. We're going to heaven. We're going to heaven. Praise the Lord. And we can remember why that's so tonight just by going to the table. So take communion. Be blessed and bless him. Bless Jesus Christ tonight with honoring him in this way. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for your prophet Jeremiah. What a faithful servant he was. And I pray now as we take some time and go to the table that you would meet us here and just bless this time, Lord, as we honor you with remembering what you've done. We ask that you would just come and cleanse us, Lord, of things that we are perhaps harboring, some of the Babylonian things perhaps, Lord, that we're continuing to defend. May we confess those tonight and just simply let you have your way in our life. That would honor you. That would bless you. And you'd be able to do wonderful things in our lives. So we want that to be so. Take this time and use it for your glory. We remember you are King in Jesus' name. Amen.